Wings are now back at full strength, having found replacements for guitarist Jimmy McCulloch and drummer Joe English, who left the band last year. The new drummer is Steve Holly, who's toured with Kiki Dee and backed Elton John in the studio, and McCulloch's place will be filled by session musician Lawrence Juber. A spokesman for Wings made it clear that the newcomers would have to prove themselves before being accepted as full members of the band. The new lineup is now in rehearsal, and if things work out, it seems probable that Wings will make a concert comeback in the autumn. This is Brian Matthew in London, and our guest is David Bowie. Alan Yentob, who's been talking to David in Berlin, asked where the singer would record his next studio album.
I got quite intrigued with the idea of Kenya, I don't know whether that's actually a very good idea. I went to a couple of studios there, but they've got a lot of voltage problems and probably only get half an album done before something broke down. So it might be Japan. It might in fact be New York, because there's a lot of very exciting things happening in New York. A lot of the new writers and bands are working in New York.
And now you're going to fly wherever you go?
I've been flying an awful lot, yeah. It's sort of half and half. If the distances are quite short, I still prefer a motor.
But this is the David Bowie who said, I'll never fly.
Yes. Well, yes, I really did a therapy job on myself when I left Los Angeles, and I changed an awful lot of things in my life. An awful lot.
And do you feel more at ease, more
relaxed? Yes, I do, very much so.
Don't you wonder sometimes about some vision? The color of my room, where I will live. Blue, blue. Pale blinds drawn all day. Nothing to read, nothing to say. Blue, blue. I will sit right down, waiting for the gift of sound and vision.
And since he's in the movies again, sound and vision is rather appropriate for David Bowie.
That report from Andy Finney on the BBC Rockline. From Peter Gabriel's new LP, one of the two solo albums he's made since leaving Genesis. Clive Williamson has been talking to Peter about the albums and asked why the first one contains such a diversity of musical styles.
I was just interested in the songwriting aspect then, and just exploring different areas.
I mean, it wasn't some sort of rejection of the Genesis mould or anything like that?
A bit of that, in that I felt in order to justify recording in a different area or recording, that I should make it as different as possible to which I come from. Mm. And that I also wanted to set some sort of new identity up for myself.
The track I like best, I mean, that was chosen as a single in this country, Salisbury Hill.
Right.
The thing I latched onto that track was the backing, which had that very strange sort of drum sound on.
Ah, oh, yes. It's actually a synthesizer that Larry Fast programmed to be triggered by a keyboard, which the percussionist Jimmy Malin then played. So, although it sounds like a drum, it is actually a keyboard. Which he was hitting at random, at least, so that the sort of apparent frequencies of it would appear to move as one went up the keyboard, but it wasn't in any predictable fashion at all.
On Salisbury Hill, I could see the city light. Wind was blowing, time stood still. Eagle flew out.
the night. He was something to observe. Came in close, I heard a voice. Standing, stretching every nerve. I had to listen, had no choice.
That was a hit single in Britain for Peter Gabriel. Clive Williamson has been talking to Peter Gabriel about his two solo albums and asked who produced them.
The first one was produced by Bob Ezrin. I'd gone to America to look for a producer in part, and there were about five people that I'd seen. And of those, Bob seemed to me to be the most interesting and also the most interested in what I was doing. And at the time, I wasn't confident in my own ability as an arranger, and so I wanted someone who had ideas in that area if I should fall short. And then when the second album came out, I had a lot more confidence and a lot more definite ideas of what I wanted to do in arrangements, some of which were probably a little experimental and a little different from the way in which Bob was used to recording, and I wanted to bring in Robert, therefore, whose ideas and approach to sound I was very interested in.
And it's Robert
could,
Fripp.
Yeah, Robert Fripp, sorry. Mm. And could sit back more sort of as a musician or figure than as a regular producer.
Bob Ezrin had worked with Alice Cooper, hadn't he?
Yeah, with Alice Cooper, Lou Reed, and Kiss. No, I mean, there's no sort of bad feeling, particularly. Yeah, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he knows more about the actual process of recording than anyone else I've come across.
Down the Dolce Vita from Peter Gabriel's first solo album. Peter Gabriel's new album was produced by one-time King Crimsonite Robert Fripp. Peter told Clive Williamson how he met Fripp.
When I was with Genesis, he was curious about me and came over to my flat one day, and I was out, in fact, then. But we met later in Island Studios and began talking a bit. And I knew his girlfriend had been working with Atlantic Records for a period, and so got together on various social occasions and then so got to know him as a friend. He's also my favourite guitar player. So he was one of the figures that I thought of, you know, when it came to this album. I think some of the record company people in America, I think, were a little worried with the choice because they thought it would be, the end result would be a little experimental or left of field and probably non-commercial, which is, in fact, in some cases, their opinion of this second album. But I like it myself. For my own part, I think it's a lot stronger. I think the writing and the ideas certainly give me more satisfaction.
To what extent did Bob Fripp influence the new album?
It's always hard to tie down. I mean, I think in some ways he was trying to function in the way that he felt I would like it. In that he insisted in it being credited, produced by Robert Fripp for Peter Gabriel, as opposed to just by Robert Fripp, which is what I was going to put, because some of the things that are on there were what he felt I was trying to go for rather than what he felt sounded best.
Exposure, and it's on Peter Gabriel's new album. The London stage production of the Tim Rice Andrew Lloyd Webber musical Evita has received rave reviews and has been booked out for months in advance. The cast, which is headed by the previously unknown Elaine Page and includes David Essex, has been in the studio recording an original cast album of the show. The original LP of the show with Julie Covington has now achieved platinum status in Britain. This is Brian Matthew in London, and our guest is Peter Gabriel. He's been telling Clive Williamson how his new solo album differs from the previous one.
I think probably the first difference to hit people is in the sound, in the arrangements. As I said, there's less use of echo, and there's some unusual combinations of instruments. The tracks are, in some cases, a bit more experimental than on the first album. I like the lyrics of this album probably better than the previous one. I don't know, it's quite hard to be objective. I'm in a sort of limbo period at the moment where having been very up in the making of it, I now sort of await the world's decision.
Now, apart from Exposure, as you said, which was co-written with Robert Fripp, did you write everything on the album yourself?
The track Mother of Violence was written with my wife Jill. It was actually a song which we had written for a village play which she was working on with the village kids, and I liked the melody, so developed it a little and switched some of the I rewrote the lyrics entirely, and then tried it along with a few others for the album.
Mother of Violence from Peter Gabriel's new album. In the next US Army Rock Capsule, our guest is Tom Petty. For the present, goodbye. This is Brian Matthew in London. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers have a big following in Britain, and they were here for the Nebworth Festival. Richard Skinner seized the opportunity to talk to the group's leader.
How are things going for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers in America at the moment?
Great. At last, everything's fine in America. It took us a long time to break America. But it's good.
Did you actually hit initial success a bit quicker over in Britain than you
much
did in the States?
Much quicker, yeah. Much quicker. Now I think we've gone ahead of that over there. Yeah, it's real crazy over there. I don't know what to think of all that. That we just come from there 3 weeks. And it's different. Everyone's sort of screaming and throwing things.
Sounds like the Beatles or something. Is it that sort of reception you're getting, the pop star thing, or what?
Well, there's a lot of girls screaming. But the guys come too. It's just a good time. There's a lot of energy. I think that's good. I think that's healthy, you know. The kids haven't had anything to to really scream about, because they everything that they give them to scream about is these sort of recycled TV stars, you know, that would be pop stars that they've manufactured. But you know, we're a real rock and roll band, so that's it's like it is a musical trip. We haven't turned into Sean Cassidy or anything. We just you know, nothing against Sean, but we're just playing. We're just playing. It's like a, you know, we started out there playing like the whiskey in little bars and stuff, and now it's just, it's a natural evolvement.
Does that mean you're going to be eventually playing the Dodger Stadium and things like that, all the big venues?
No.
I don't want you no more. Ain't going to give any more than you give for me. I don't want you. It's too hard. Can't try any harder than you try. But you look so good. Yeah, you do, you do, you do. Yeah, things some might change it as just the.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Richard Skinner has been talking to the frontman of the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty, and asked if, in view of the band's increasing popularity, they'd be likely to play bigger venues such as sports arenas.
No, we try to avoid that. You know, I think you don't have to play Dodger Stadium. You can just play the Civic for 7 nights. You don't have to do.
Same number of people, right?
Yeah, I'd rather do that. I'd rather take a week in one place and just let everybody see the show.
What do you reckon it is that the audience suddenly woke up to? Why did they take so long to buy the music?
Well, you know, we were never really promoted in America like we were promoted here. When it was a real word of mouth, street level type thing. The kids actually made the record happen in America, and you know, a few other incidental things like we changed record labels, and we got a much more sympathetic sort of treatment, you know, before. But I don't know. I'm too close to it to really understand what happened. It's just one day it was crazy.
Does it get in the way of the music? Do you find it harder to do a really good performance when you got the people freaking out in front of you?
When they get a hold of it, like they've pulled us, you know, like Michael's been pulled off last week.
What, into the crowd?
Yeah. When that can distract you a little bit. No one's been hurt. We've been knocked over and stuff, but we've never been. I think it's good. I think we play better because if there's that much energy in the room, you can't help but play better. We don't sort of just forget about music or anything.
Music of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Yes, are now putting the finishing touches to their new album, which should be ready for release in mid-August. As soon as the band has finished mixing the album, they'll start preparing for their American tour, which will start at the end of next month and last for 5 weeks. This is Brian Matthew in London. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers established a reputation in Britain before they were recognised in their own country, but now seem assured of big audiences wherever they go. Richard Skinner asked Tom Petty if the band had changed in any way during the struggle for success.
I think we're better. I think we're like 2 years old now, so we're better. You know, when we made our first album, we'd never played live. And now we did over 200 gigs last year, so we're a lot more of a group, I think, than the five of us. I think everyone has a... I think the other four personalities have come into it really a lot stronger than they had in the past.
And yet you're still the primary songwriter, aren't you? You're still the one who writes the hit
records? Yeah, for the most part, because the rest of them are so lazy they won't. But I think they write, but Michael's writing a bit with me. But yeah, I'm the one, that's always been sort of my job in the band, is rhythm guitar and write the songs.
And you intend to keep that
much,
up.
Thank you very much.
You're over here to do Nebworth.
Right.
Are you doing any other appearances in Britain, or is it a quick visit?
The reason we're doing Nebworth is like we were committed to an American tour, and the Nebworth thing came up, and it was an opportunity to come and to play to a great deal of people, and it would only take a week, mm-hmm. and so it was either do that or wait till sometime, late maybe December sometime to come back. So we thought it'd be nice to come over and play.
Of a track called Listen to Her Heart from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Our guest in the next US Army Rock Capsule will be Ray Parker Jr., founder of the funk band Radio. In this rock capsule, we hear from one of the world's top soul musicians, Ray Parker Jr. This is Brian Matthew in London. For many years, Ray Parker Jr. was a leading session musician, playing with such giants as Stevie Wonder. Now he has his own band, Radio, which was in Britain recently, giving Richard Skinner a chance to talk to Ray and to ask him how many records he's played on as a session man.
Over 1,000 albums. I used to do 35 records a week.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. That's why I'm doing radio now.
Can you work out how many hits in that case you worked on?
I think probably at least over 400 gold singles and albums.
Did you get a lot out of that?
Yeah, I think the first few years is very exciting. Then it's downhill all the way. it's I don't know. You're not enthused. That certain enthusiasm was lost, Plus, I don't know, in the United States, they just treat musicians real wrong. When it comes gold record time, everybody gets a gold record except the musician. The writers, the producers, the artists, the engineers, the people that worked on it, the marketing people, the promotion people, everybody except the people that made the record that was on the tape. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. That's when I decided I wasn't playing on nobody else's records except my own.
Something good for you.
Music from Radio's debut album. Our guest in this rock capsule is Ray Parker Jr. of the band called Radio. The band Radio has entered the soul charts with a single called Is This a Love Thing? They were in Britain recently supporting Bootsy's Rubber Band, and Richard Skinner talked to Radio's frontman, Ray Parker Jr.
Well, look, Radio is very much your project as a band, isn't it? It was your idea to get it together.
Yeah. On Jack and Jill, I had played all the instruments myself. You know, I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I went into the studio. I know which way I'm going.
Where's that?
To the top. Yeah, the first, like, the single in the United States is 1.5 million now, and the album is gold, the single is gold. So not bad for the first time out.
You have British success as well, of course, with Jack and Jill. What is that success in what is to you a foreign territory? What does that mean to you?
Oh, that means a lot. That means I don't have to stay at home all the time. You know, I can come over here and... In fact, all of the British areas, well, I mean, as far as like New Zealand is doing good, and Australia here is doing real, real well. And I hear it's going real well here.
And a lot of people are expecting big things for the follow-up single, too.
Oh, yeah.
Written by, produced by, performed by Ray Parker. Quite a lot of work involved in that.
Yeah.
Do you find it, seriously, do you find it a bit of a strain?
Yeah, that was a bit of a strain. But, I mean, it's nothing else to do. It beats playing 16 hours a day for somebody else's records.
From the album Radio. We'll hear from a new guest musician in the next US Army Rock Capsule. Until then, goodbye.